Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
If you're looking for pitching, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Thursday, August 20th. Frank Stanfield here with Scott White and Chris Towers. Another crazy day in baseball. A pair of doubleheaders. Lots of Wednesday recap today on the show. Lots of rankings talk as well. We'll, you know, figure out where players are shuffling around. I know that, Scott, your latest trade chart is out. How's everything going, guys?
Going good. It's not just you and me today, Frank. We're joined by a special guest, Chris Towers.
Oh, a special guest. Chris, it's great to have you on the show.
I don't appreciate the sarcasm here. I don't know. First of all, like, I do a lot. I don't know if anyone at this company realizes how much work I do. All right. And second of all, like, I was here 3 days ago. It's not like it's been like months.
You look completely different. You have this Raleigh Fingers mustache.
I'm starting to curl it out.
Beautiful.
Just to see. It's been a while since I've trimmed it. And, you know, I'm going to have to trim it soon because it gets to a certain length. And then it gets starts to get caught in your mouth while you're eating.
Oh, ooh. I know that feeling. It's a terrible feeling.
And then you'll like just get like a little bit of hair that you bite off.
It's disgusting.
In your food, and it's really unpleasant, and it's like really hard to eat ice cream. And
I cannot relate to this.
There's
I've
a
never
new
had
ice cream shop
in
my neighborhood that I've been really wanting to try out. And so, you know, there's just a lot that goes into having. It's not just it's not just for sex appeal. There's a lot that goes into it.
If okay? You needed another reason to watch us on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. You have Chris Towers with a curly mustache. The guy just continues to embody hipster. I love it. Way to stay on brand, Chris. But we've already talked too much about non-baseball related items. Let's jump right in.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, guys, I'm going to get us started because I'm not going to allow either of you to steal my oh my goodness gracious player of the day or night. And it's Trevor Bauer. And this is really kind of just, how do I want to say it? This is a monologue. This is an apology. This is a hindsight is 2020 because
In 2020.
That's right. There you go, Scott. Hindsight is 2020 in 2020. We might make that a segment, Scott. I would like to apologize for ever doubting Trevor Bauer. I would like to apologize for telling people not to draft Trevor Bauer. Hopefully you listened to Scott and you didn't listen to me on that one. On a night where Bauer was supposed to wear his free Joe Kelly cleats, which were awesome, by the way.
I've got some thoughts once you're done, by the way, on these cleats.
A complete game as part of the second leg of a doubleheader. So 7 innings, 1 hit, 0 earned runs, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts, 9 swinging strikes on 97 pitches for Trevor Bauer, who has been utterly ridiculous entering Wednesday. He was a top 3 starting pitcher in both head-to-head points and in Roto. His turnaround is completely unconventional, but when we're talking about Trevor Bauer, what is not unconventional? His four-seam fastball usage is up 17% this year, and he's really riding that fastball to his success, even though the velocity on the pitch is down. What has really helped him is that he's not walking as many. He did have 3 walks in this start, but entering today, his walks per 9 were under 2. He has the lowest line drive rate, the lowest hard contact rate, and the highest soft contact rate among qualified starting pitchers. His entire Statcast page is just filled with red, And I was going to make the argument that, all right, well, you know, he's had an easy schedule. This doesn't really, like, you know, he's a sell-high candidate. Luis Castillo has had the same schedule, and he has not been nearly as good. So, Scott, I know that you moved him up to SP6 in your rankings, and I think it's probably about time that I get him inside my top 10 as well. Trevor Bauer, I apologize.
Okay, two things. One, literally 2 days ago, Trevor Bauer tweeted that people should stop throwing at players' heads. So, clown stuff to wear free Joe Kelly cleats. Utterly ridiculous. And two, look, I don't want to say what is probably going on with Trevor Bauer. All I will say is that Trevor Bauer made a big stink about the Astros supposedly using foreign substances to increase the spin rate on their pitches. And he has basically unprecedented increased spin rate on his fastball in particular. It's up like 17%, but also all of his pitches. I'm not saying anything. I'm just pointing out what a weird coincidence that is. Presumably, he will keep doing whatever it is that has made him miraculously add 400 RPMs to his fastball, which is what makes fastballs more effective.
He has the highest spin rate among fastballs in all of baseball right now.
Like, yeah, he's good. Yeah, he's...
It's Kyle's body. Check out his body of work.
He's figured some stuff out, Trevor Bauer.
No, in all seriousness. Yeah,
this was always a possibility.
Right. And I said that before the season started. I said it can go two routes. He can return second round value, or he can be a free agent by the middle of August. Well, we're clearly seeing what route it's gone down thus far. Scott, I was trying to like figure out a lesson that I've learned throughout this process of doubting Trevor Bauer. And I really don't know that there is one, because he's just doing something that we couldn't really project heading into the season. He's not even doing it the way that we've seen him do it before. And this happens all the time. So while I would like to take a lesson from this with Trevor Bauer, I don't think that there's anything that I can actually really learn from it.
Yeah, I don't think it was a bad process. You kind of give me too much credit saying you should have listened to Scott instead of Frank. I obviously wasn't as much of a downer about Bauer as you were. But I think it mostly came up. I was having to defend like the one and only draft where I took him and the one and only draft I did. So it's not like I have a ton of Trevor Bauer I'm enjoying now either. I was also reluctant to take him, but I had a more open mind toward Trevor Bauer than you did, especially since it didn't seem like he was going for a, like he wasn't being drafted according to his 2018 production.
Toward the end, things did start. He did start to go like inside of the top 70 to 75 picks over like the last week before the season. You know, when people really start to throw ADP out the window and just grab guys wherever they like them.
Yeah.
And I just think the lesson is to not think about things in terms of one outcome, you know, in terms of the most likely outcome.
Sure.
You know, especially when you're talking about, you know, a mid-round pick like that. We've had a series on the football side where Ben Gretsch is looking at like key decision points throughout the draft, like, you know, the third running back versus the fourth, because that's one of the big choices you'll have to make. But then also like running backs in the fifth round versus each other. And one of the things he's trying to show in this is like some guys are more likely to have a good season, but less likely to have either a really, really good season or a really bad season. And some guys, you know, they have the number of outcomes is much wider.
Yeah.
And they're much less likely to hit any of them than that first guy is. But in the case of a Trevor Bauer, we've seen the upside, which is arguably the best pitcher in baseball. And we've seen the downside is like fringe starter.
I love this. I love what you're talking about here. Acknowledging the full range of outcomes and that it's different for different players. I mean, that is what I mean when I say I don't believe in projections. Like, mm-hmm. That's the most incendiary way of saying it, and I say it that way on purpose. But like, projections presume one outcome for a player if you follow them, if you draft according to them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that, just more generally, because you know it's something we've talked about a lot with like the comp I always come back to was like Hunter Pence, you know, like 5 years ago, where he would always finish like 23rd at outfielder.
but throughout every point in the season, he was never more than like the 30th best outfielder. And so it's like, was he ever really the 23rd outfielder, or was he just active and healthy? And so that's, you know, that's part of the lesson is, yeah, we should talk about ranges of outcomes more. And, you know, when you're building your team, what kind of team can you build to where Trevor Bauer makes sense, I think is an interesting thing that we should think about.
Yeah. And I guess with that, the lesson for me, now that we've talked through it a little bit, was the price for Bauer was, you like, most realistically, you can get him as your SP3. So it's like, at that point, why wouldn't you take the risk on someone who has the potential to be a top 10 starting pitcher or one of the best pitchers in baseball? Yeah. All right, the downside is he's terrible, but like, who else has upside like that in his range?
Most starting pitchers after the second round, really, most starting pitchers, there's like a 50% chance they'll be terrible. That's just how starting pitcher works historically, is after the first two rounds, you're basically 50-50 if you're going to get a good player. And so that's another thing, is that Trevor Bauer's at like the lower end range in terms of price this year for those kind of pitchers.
All right, Scott. Oh my goodness gracious. Give me a standout from Wednesday's action.
So the Tigers White Sox, they had an interesting game today. Casey Mize's major league debut, and it was great. I'm sure we'll get into it. He may have been upstaged by his opponent, who was also making his major league debut, Dane Dunning of the White Sox, who neither one of them went five innings. Okay. But for a major league debut, their numbers were both good. 4.1 innings for Dunning, 5 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. And the most eye-popping number for me was 17 swinging strikes, a great number no matter how you look at it, on just 73 pitches. It's like he had a 23.2% swinging strike rate, which would be, you know, obviously nothing nobody could ever do over a full season. But Dane Dunning is interesting because you look at his minor league track record. He missed all of last year for Tommy John surgery. But the previous 2 years, 2018, 2.71 ERA, 1.19 WHIP, 10.4 K per nine. Really good numbers, right? You look at his scouting report in Baseball America, fastball 55, slider 60, curveball 60, changeup 55, control 55, like great ratings across the board, great grades. And then they give him only a 50 overall. And that's something I've noticed with Dunning, tracking him as a prospect over the years, is the numbers are great. The scouting reports, they seem reluctant to get fully behind him. And there even seems to be even lacking an internal logic like that. So I think he might be really good, and I am definitely excited to pick him up based on this performance.
Yeah, Dane Dunning is only rostered in 11% of CBS leagues, so he is widely available, and you know, the minor league numbers are tremendous too. So he's coming off Tommy John surgery, former first round pick in 2016, career in the minors, 2.74 ERA, 1.13 WHIP, 300 strikeouts and 266 innings pitched. You know, mainly four seam, two seam, slider, curve. But man, he really was tremendous.
That's a full arsenal. And I just told you, Baseball America says he has four pitches graded 55 or above, you know, on a, that like 50 is average, right? So 55, 60, like that's good. That's a really good grade. And he has it on four pitches and control. And you know, that's a subjective measure, obviously, but the numbers look good too. So I don't know why the scouting reports, even with those grades, they kind of speak like he's just some, you know, back end rotation guy.
The one thing I will point out, he did get hit pretty hard in this game. Average exit velocity 91.6 miles per hour. Had, I think, 4 or 5 batted balls above 100. 4 batted balls above 100 miles per hour. So, you know, maybe it's something where, as the lineup settled in against him, they started to figure something out. I'm not exactly sure, but that's the only thing I would add there, I guess.
Yeah, he finished 4 1/3. He allowed 3 runs. It was a home run to Jamer Candelario that honestly was almost robbed by Adam Engel. I was watching this start, and honestly, it was probably my favorite game that I've watched all season, because him and Mize, they were just they were really special. So I'm excited about him. And Dunning might be a two-star pitcher next week, Scott. So we'll kind of see how the schedules shake out. And, you know, hopefully he remains in the rotation. I don't see why he wouldn't. But he could potentially be a two-star pitcher as well. Chris.
Yeah.
A standout from Wednesday. Good or bad? Oh, my goodness gracious.
Rafael Devers is fine. His second three-hit game in a row, hit a bomb to just left of center field today. He's got, you know, his overall numbers still not where you want them to be. You know, an OPS below 600 or 700, but, you know, he's hitting over, you know, 350 over his last six games. He's got three extra base hits in that time. Rafael Devers is fine. Like, the strikeouts aren't really they were a concern early in the season. They've mostly slowed down.
Yeah, two in his last six games.
Yeah,
two strikeouts.
I think it's fair to say Rafael Devers is going to be just fine.
Which tells you, I mean, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, the BABIP is low. The expected stats look good. But over a short sample, which is what this season has been so far, even things like strikeouts, even things like hard hit rate, they can still be skewed by
that
sample.
Yeah, I mean, that fluctuates all the time for most players. You know, even stuff that we think of as relatively stable. You know, we talk about like BABIP and home run rate and all these things but like ground ball rate and strikeout rate and walk rate, those things fluctuate a lot in season as well. And just because you strike out 25% of the time in 20 games doesn't mean that you're going to be that guy forever.
Yeah, especially with these short samples. And we talk about this a lot, but I don't think people realize, like, when you go into StatCast and you go into FanGraphs and look at the numbers, like, these things change very quickly. If Rafael Devers goes out and has a four-hit game where he hits four line drives and all of them are counted as hard hits, like, that's going to skew the numbers tremendously in just one game. So he finished on Wednesday 3-for-4, home run, 3 RBIs. That's back-to-back three-hit games. He has 11 hits over his last seven games. And need I remind you, last year he did not hit a home run in his first 32 games of the season. That would be more than half the year this year.
He had a
748 OPS over his first 32 games, which means he hit 32 home runs, all of his home runs over the final 124. This is someone that can get hot in a hurry. So this is kind of like what we're talking about when we say, like, bet on the talent.
Yep. And by the way, since we're kind of down this path already, George Springer homered today. He had been a little banged up recently. He's off to a bad start. Everybody's laughing at him because he's an Astro. but in contrast to even Jose Altuve, like, the expected stats for George Springer is basically, in terms of the data, having a typical George Springer season. He's not at the level he was last year, which was an outlier season for him. But, you know, 261 XBA, 461 X slug, the strikeout rate right around 20%, like always. He's George Springer, and he just hasn't gotten good results yet. And I think it's going to start here very soon.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if it takes even a little bit longer for him because he was dealing with a wrist injury, which is something that can obviously, you know, hamper a batter for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. Ronald Acuna has landed on the IL with a wrist injury, so could just take even a little bit more time for George Springer, but he is coming around. Coors Field will help with that. Some news and notes. Alex Bregman, speaking of the Astros, left Wednesday's game with a hamstring injury. Scott, are you interested in, if he's out of the lineup, would you be interested in Abraham Toro, who came in, and it's just cheap exposure to a pretty good Astros lineup?
Not really. It would have to be a pretty deep league. I am unsure of the skills there, and I think I'm not even confident he would play every day if Bregman misses time.
The other name I wanted to ask about in the Astros lineup was Taylor Jones, who I know was called up a little bit earlier this season, but now with Yordan Alvarez out, might get the opportunity to play pretty consistently. Last year in the minors, a .291 batting average, 22 homers, .889 OPS. Chris, I'll throw this one your way. Any interest in Taylor Jones in deeper leagues?
It's got to be another one where it's a deeper league. You know, there's like some swing and miss in his game, right? I'm trying to remember, but he's someone who doesn't, not as much as I thought, I guess. 158 strikeouts in 164 games. That's really not that bad. Yeah, I guess the problem is there's no stolen bases there. And so he's really got to hit and play every day.
And there's not much of a prospect pedigree here. It's kind of, he's kind of like Tyler White in that way, I guess. The numbers look pretty good, but
yeah, I think I'd probably be more interested in Abraham Toro, but neither one is, outside of an AL only league, really someone I'm super interested in.
Just to make sure we don't bury the lead, we talked about Jordan Alvarez. He's out for the year now, right?
Well,
I was about to hit it. It was part of the news and notes. But
Dusty Baker said he may be out for the year.
Oh no, he's out.
There's been a report since then.
Okay,
he's having season-ending surgery to repair a partially torn patella tendon in his right knee, which obviously season-ending injury, bad news. But we've been wringing our hands over Jordan Alvarez's dynasty value because what's going on with his knee? If this is what's going on with his knee, he's probably going to be fine in the long run. Like, problem solved. I understand the disappointment of drafting Jordan Alvarez in 2020 and getting nothing. But I think in the long run, this is good news.
I mean, look, I'm going to draft Jordan Alvarez in the sixth round in every league next year. And everyone's going to say, oh, he can't stay healthy. He's going to have a huge season. He's never going to get hurt again. As always happens with these things. And I'm very excited about that experience.
Oh, man. There are so many things I could say right now, but let's move on. Mitch Garver left with right side soreness on Wednesday, so that does not help his case. We've talked a lot about Mitch Garver recently. Seth Lugo is starting Thursday's game, and the plan is to stretch him out to stay in the rotation. So Edwin Diaz is back, I guess, question mark, as the closer. He came in the bottom of the eighth on Wednesday. They were up one run. He walked in the tying run and then stayed in the bottom of the ninth once the Mets grabbed a two-run lead because Brandon Kinsler gave up a two-run homer to Michael Conforto.
What an unfortunate blown save. He gets four outs with only one base runner allowed, strikes out three, and he gets the blown save. Gets a win, too. He's been a lot better recently, I think. Obviously, it's great news for Edwin Diaz's fantasy value. This is just the Mets broadcast team was speculating this is what's going on with Lugo, right? This isn't confirmed, him moving to the rotation. He was unavailable today, and that's how I'm just going by what I saw on Twitter, but it was from the Mets broadcast team, I think. I don't know, Chris, you're saying you don't like it.
Let's see. I don't believe in Seth Lugo as a starter. Like that's happened before and it never really worked out. And he didn't really find himself until he got to the rotation. So I would expect that's probably not going to go too well. I know he might be someone that people are excited about, but I wouldn't look too hard at him out of the rotation.
It's an upside play at a position that's exhausted a lot of upside options already. I would just say that. Like, I'm not sure. I don't have a lot of confidence it's going to work out. I don't have a lot of confidence in any incoming starting pitcher at this point.
Sure. I'd rather Dunning for sure. Mize for sure. I would throw him probably behind Tarik Skubal as well.
That would be that. I could see that. Yeah. I could see not wanting to move on from Skubal yet.
So if you guys owned Lugo as a reliever in a roto league, you would just hold on to him and kind of see how this plays out as a starter. See if, you know, it somehow translates the success that he's had in the bullpen over to the starter role. So we're not dropping.
I wasn't.
I guess.
And that's another RPASP. That's a relief pitcher as a starting pitcher. So Drew Pomeranz is one we've spoke about recently, and Seth Lugo, another one now. Yadier Molina might be ready to return to the Cardinals' lineup on Thursday. Someone who will not return to their lineup on Thursday is David Dahl, who was placed on the IL with a back injury. Brendan Rodgers has been recalled. Chris, does this matter?
I sure hope so. He's got all kinds of prospect pedigree, pretty good minor league track record. Did not do well in his first taste of the majors last season before he separated his shoulder. And, you know, it's possible that he's still recovering from that and won't be ready. But, you know, this is a guy who in 56 games at AAA has hit .311 with an .881 OPS. There's a little bit of potential for speed there. He stopped running once he got to AAA, but it's a small sample size. I just think he could be the kind of guy in Coors Field. Like, he could be a Charlie Blackman type hitter in Coors Field. Just a ton of contact, really good skills as a hitter, not going to have the speed Charlie Blackmon did, but playing in Coors Field could be really, really good for a guy with a plus hit tool.
They just need to find, they just need to be intentional about getting him in the lineup. And that's the concern. I don't have the confidence they will be.
Yeah. Yasmani Grandal and Luis Robert remained out on Wednesday for the White Sox. The Dodgers optioned starting pitcher Tony Gonsolin to their alternate training site. Scott, if you added Tony Gonsolin recently, would you drop him? Do you hold on to him?
It depends how shallow the league is, how big your need for pitching is. I think he'll be back. I think he's pretty good. Like I said just a minute ago, we've kind of we've quickly exhausted a lot of upside plays at starting pitcher. I feel like it's to the point where I see about 50 starting pitchers that are any level of trustworthy, and I'm including Rich Hill in that group. So that shows you how far I'm stretching the definition of trustworthy. So anyone who does anything good is on the verge of being a top 50 starting pitcher. and I would include Gonsolin in that group, but they apparently don't need a fifth starter. Oh no, they were going six man. They were going six man with Gonsolin in there. So yeah, I mean, I feel like he should already be taking Stripling's prep place. You have Alex Wood set to come back soon, I think. I'm not sure, but I know Gonsolin will get a chance at some point.
Yeah, Scott, you mentioned top 50 starting pitchers. I think we're at like 35 right now, honestly. It's like,
well, like I said, yeah, I was including Rich Hill and trustworthy.
Yeah, so once you get past, for me, and we don't even trust James Paxton, but I have Paxton and Julio Urias, someone we'll talk about who couldn't even escape the second inning on Wednesday night. I mean, those are my 35th and 36th starting pitchers. And it's like, after that, you get into Plesac. When is he going to pitch? Keuchel, he's fine. Marquez still has Coors Field. Lance McCullers has been up and down. So it's honestly, for me, it's like outside of that top 35, you're right, man. Starting pitcher is just kind of all over the place right now.
I remember a week and a half ago when starting pitchers were doing better than hitters. That ended really quick.
Gosh, man.
You know what? I'm going to say 45. It's 45 because Rich Hill is number 45 for me. Tyler Chatwood, 46. The thing is, Lance McCullers, you're pretty much just starting him, right? I understand it's been up and down. Framber Valdez, I'm including him in this group now, especially after a great start at Coors Field today. One where I was afraid to use him, but he's just been the best possible version of himself and is such a good ground ball pitcher that, like, I don't even care that it's a low swinging strike rate. I think he could keep this up. So yeah, that's Pablo Lopez is on the verge of joining that group after, a couple good starts in a row.
Honestly, he might be there too. Like, I have him inside my top 50, and like, you can make the argument that he's better than Dallas Keuchel or Rich Hill.
I'm pretty sure I heard the Marlins broadcast today compared Jacob DeGrom's changeup to Pablo Lopez's unfavorably. So things might be getting out of hand hype-wise in Miami.
I will say the changeup, I looked into
it's beautiful.
The pitch specifically entering tonight, the swinging strike rate on Pablo Lopez's changeup was 30%. So this is
That's pretty good.
This is this is an amazing pitch that we're talking about for Pablo Lopez. The last news item, Nate Pearson, I am sorry, Scott, has been placed on the IL with right elbow tightness. Might explain, some of the terrible performance that we've seen thus far. Chris, are you okay dropping Nate Pearson? I would say just put him on your IL, but everybody's on your IL.
Yeah, that's the thing. If there are a lot of leagues where I just don't have IR spots. If you've got one, sure, keep him, but it's not someone who, based on what he's shown so far and the struggles that he's had, who demands to be held on to, especially because we just don't know if he'll be back this season. It's entirely possible that this is something that they just keep him on the shelf for.
All right, let's look at some of these pitchers. We've already mentioned a ton of them that were on the mound on Wednesday. And Casey Mize, one of the top prospects in all of baseball. The splitter is as advertised, and he was leaving it up in that final inning. I mentioned, I was watching the start very closely, and it got hit around a little bit, that final inning. But for the most part, while it was on, it was on. It was an amazing pitch. 4 1/3, 7 hits, 3 earned. Love that there was no walks in this performance, seven strikeouts. Scott, what did you take away from this?
I mean, this is the debut we've been waiting for from all these prospect call-ups coming up doing nothing. This is the one that should energize you the most. And there's a lot of swing and miss in that White Sox lineup. And that the question for Mize coming in was, okay, less than a strikeout per inning in the minors last year. Is he really going to be enough of a bat misser to be a standout in fantasy? Well, acknowledging he was facing a lineup that whiffs a lot, the whiffs were certainly there. The splitter was very good, like you said. This is a guy who's was the number one pick in the minor league in the amateur draft 2 years ago.
And was pretty much viewed as someone who maybe could have stepped into a major league rotation.
Right. I mean, before he hurt his shoulder last year, his numbers were absurd. It was like an ERA below one, a whip around 0.5.
Yeah, and the velocity was down. Like when you mentioned the strikeout rate not being great last season, a lot of that was the post-injury return.
Yeah.
And the velocity was like more like 90, 92. So the concern, I mean, in terms of just as a pitcher, he's right there with Mackenzie Gore in terms of the most talented prospects. And so for me, it's just like he's healthy right now, so I think he's going to be really good. He looks aesthetically a lot like Max Scherzer. Like very similar delivery, that kind of crossbody sidearm thing. That's a lofty comparison, but that's what he looks like and profiles like, you know, given the fastball, slider, changeup heavy arsenal. I think he's going to be really good as long as he's healthy. That's really the only question for me, both in the short and long term, is just, you know, he's already had elbow or shoulder injuries. Shoulder injuries can be oftentimes for pitchers even more, you know, difficult than elbow injuries. So that's the only concern.
And I mentioned this when we spoke about Mize getting the call the other day. I like that he hasn't really been babied like other prospects that we've seen before, like Lizardo. Last year, he made 21 starts between high A and double A ball, and in 10 of those, he went six or more innings. So
had a no-hitter.
Yeah, so I don't think that he's going to be babied. He did throw just 73 pitches on Wednesday night in his debut, but I think that's just because he was kind of running out of steam and running into some trouble.
And because he hadn't been pitching in real games.
Right.
Like, I was looking at some of these player pools. Like, some of them aren't even carrying eight hitters, so I don't even know how they're doing. I mean, well, I guess they just simulated games, three players come up.
This is the great unknown with your, especially with your guys like Luis Garcia and Kristen
Pache.
You know, these guys who haven't put up really impressive numbers, but are really, really young, is sometimes with those kind of players that switch gets flipped and they're just awesome all of a sudden. And we have no way of knowing whether that's happened for these guys because nobody's keeping score.
Right.
You know, occasionally you'll see a grainy cell phone video from one of these scrimmages, but for the most part, we have no idea. And that makes me more inclined to bet on prospects now.
Another pitcher who was great on Wednesday, actually during the day in game one of their doubleheader, was Brad Keller, and he's been great all season long. 6 2/3, 3 hits, 0 earned, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, 9 ground ball outs, 13 swinging strikes on 95 pitches for Keller. 7 of those swinging strikes were on the slider. Mike Matheny had this to say about Keller after the game. I think he got into a rhythm where his breaking ball was just as good as his fastball was. He had his fastball going to both sides of the plate. He had it cutting at times and had good sink when he needed it. Scott, 51% rostered, a 2-start pitcher next week at the Cardinals and at the White Sox is Brad Keller.
Yeah, I'd roll with him with those two matchups. He's always been a really good ground ball pitcher. He was top 10 in ground ball rate last year, and that makes him a high floor pitcher, low ceiling pitcher on a bad team, which makes him pretty fringy. If that slider develops into a swing and miss pitch, which so far it's been this year, much improved swinging strike rate on that, and he's throwing it more. That could be a game changer for Keller. I think he deserves to be on the verge of that top 50, given that it doesn't take much to move a pitcher up to that point.
Am I the only one who thought he was like 29? Like I saw this before the season. I could have sworn he was like 28, 29, and he just turned 25.
Yeah. He pitches more like he's 35.
Yeah, he feels like an old guy.
Right.
Yeah.
He's just like, you look at his career numbers and it's a lot of 6K per nine. It's like, gosh. But Scott, this group could not go four innings on Wednesday. And it's an interesting group of names here. Luis Castillo at the Royals allowed four runs, only three earned over 3 1/3. Jack Flaherty. I know that the Cardinals have really have not let their pitchers go deep into games since returning here from COVID. He only recorded 5 outs, 1 earned, 2 walks, 1 hit-by-pitch. His command seems like it was non-existent. Rich Hill's return, yikes, did not go well. 2 2/3, 4 earned, 3 walks. And then Julio Urias, less than 2 innings as well, only 5 outs, all recorded via the strikeout, but they pulled the plug rather quickly. Scott, is there anyone on this list that you are legitimately worried about?
I mean, we didn't really know how Rich Hill's season was going to shape up. Obviously, based on track record, we had high hopes, but there's been a lot of tumult. I'm not dropping him based on this outing, but I need to see him put together a good start before I'm willing to start Rich Hill. I do want to comment on a couple of the others. Flaherty, his last start was July 24th. It's August 19th. It's almost a month without starting. He's probably going to need a couple turns after this start to get back to where he's, you know, taking on a big workload. And Luis Castillo, don't freak out about Luis Castillo. Yeah. This might be the most obvious buy low candidate in baseball right now, no matter what metric you look at, hard hit rate, swinging strikes, like he's doing all of it. He entered today with a 304 XFIP, a 284 XERA, which is StatCast ERA estimator. He's number 2 in swinging strikes. He's 8th in ground ball rate. He's pitching every bit like an ace can without getting an ace result. And it's weird, but it's just one of those fluky things that happens in baseball over a small sample, which, by the way, that's still all it is so far.
Sky high BABIP. Really low left on base percentage. Like he's someone that tends to get hit a little harder than you think he would. You would think with how much movement he gets, he'd be hard to square up. But when he does have contact made, you know, it tends to get hit pretty hard. But still, there's no explanation for this.
Well, Chris, let me ask you a classic sell high, buy low situation. Would you, if you can, trade Kenta Maeda away for Luis Castillo?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were going to say someone like Aaron Nola. That would be a no, but you know, Kenta Maeda, yeah, like I love Kenta Maeda, but he's not as talented as Luis Castillo.
Well, how about Bauer, Chris?
You know, a trade I love, not to
that's
cut
a tougher
off Chris. Zach Wheeler for Luis Castillo.
Oh, I mean, if you could get Luis Castillo for Zach Wheeler, I mean, I think you could. Look, you should definitely try. Yeah. But man, that would be a really bad trade for the person giving up Luis Castillo. And I think Zach Wheeler's fine, but yeah, I mean, Luis Castillo is still, I don't think there's any reason to think he's not a top 15 pitcher.
Just by virtue of Zach Wheeler hasn't had a good start yet, and Luis Castillo has only had one good start yet, I think.
Hasn't had a bad start, you mean, Zach Wheeler.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler has only had good starts. Luis Castillo has only had one good start. Like, I think somebody who's not nearly as plugged into baseball stats as we are would go for that. Cause like, it's not like Wheeler was a scrub coming into the year. He was pretty highly regarded himself.
Yeah. That man, you'd have to be really unplugged on anything from like the last 20 years to give up Luis Castillo for Zach Wheeler.
All right.
And look,
maybe I'm wrong.
I hope the people listening who have Zach Wheeler can do it.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you have Luis Castillo, please don't.
Yes. I think you overestimate the average fantasy baseball player.
I would assume that anyone who's listening to this podcast would not accept Zach Wheeler for Luis Castillo, because every time Luis Castillo pitches, we prop him up as a buy low candidate. At some point, he's got to perform, though. That's the one thing I will say, but all the underlying numbers say that he should be better than he has been thus far. Scott, a few names that bounced back on Thursday include Chris Paddock versus Texas. Six innings, four hits, one earned, five strikeouts. Tyler Glasnow at the Yankees. I said last week that I would not start him in this start, and you got the old quality start tease here. 5 2/3, two hits, two earned, three walks, eight strikeouts.
Longest outing of the year.
Glasnow has at least two walks in all five of his starts this season. He had two or more walks in just four of 12 starts last season. So that's an interesting little tidbit on Glasnow. And then Jesus Luzardo, who last time he started, he was filling in for Montas. He didn't even know he was going to start that night. 6 1/3, four hits, two walks, seven strikeouts. Outside of that one start where he didn't know he was going to start, Luzardo has been ridiculous, Scott. So that's the bounce back crew.
He has, and I think this was the longest start of his career, meaning majors and minors. This was only the second time he went six innings, right? And he almost went seven. And was very, very efficient. Like,
92 Lazard pitches.
No concerns there. The one I might still harbor some concerns for is... it's actually better. You know what? I'm not sure Chris Paddock and Tyler Glasnow are going to live up to our expectations for them coming in, but they are not exactly players you should worry about either, especially given how few competent starting pitchers there are to go around. So, you know, I think they're going to have more starts like today than otherwise, and you should just roll with them.
The only thing I will say is, until and unless he develops that third pitch, I'm getting strong Jose Berríos vibes from Chris Paddock, where like everybody thinks he's an ace and he's just good.
That's a pretty good
strikeout rate. Swinging strike rate's not there. Swinging strike rate wasn't great last season. He threw only three curveballs today. I think part of that was one of the first curveballs, maybe the first curveball he threw, was hit for a home run by Rougned Odor. It wasn't a bad pitch. It was on the corner at the knees. It was one of those, like, Rougned Odor just hits bad pitches sometimes. So I don't know. Yeah, it's something I wish he threw it more.
Yeah, that's actually a good call. I kind of like that comp. Although Paddock does have better command and he's not going to walk as many as Berríos, he might just be that, you know, like an SP3, which is fine, you know, but it's just maybe he's not that top 15 starting pitcher.
It took like into 3 years of Jose Berríos' career as like an everyday starter for everyone to kind of realize that he's just good. And I'm not saying Chris Paddock will definitely be that. That's just the vibe I'm getting from him. And I thought that kind of before this season.
And like, to be clear, since Berríos is off to a bad start, that's not a bad outcome. That's still is somebody who's a must-start player in fantasy.
Yeah. You know, someone who has top five potential. And I think Chris Paddock does have top five potential, but he needs to improve at least, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah.
This was really the test that we were looking for when it came to Framber Valdez going into Colorado to see how he would fare. 7 2/3, seven hits, three runs, only one of those were earned, one walk, five strikeouts, 12 ground ball outs, 11 swinging strikes on 101 pitches. Scott, Framber Valdez is a must-start starting pitcher, buy or sell?
Until he gives us a reason not to start him. I mean, this was the one venue where I wouldn't have been willing to say that, and clearly he came through in a big way. So, he obviously has walk issues in his past, and they could come back to bite him again. But for now, he's doing exactly what he needs to do to be a great pitcher, and this is the result.
You want to know how I know? It was a crazy day. We are about 45 minutes into the podcast, and we haven't mentioned the man that actually threw a real complete game, not a doubleheader complete game, and that's Aaron Civale. 9 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes on 109 pitches. I don't think there's anything to add. I just think Civale's really good. He's like a top 30-ish starting pitcher.
I am having trouble finding a narrative that meets the result at this point. Because it was before, okay, he stopped emphasizing his fastball so much, going more with the secondary stuff. Last couple starts, he's been throwing the fastball as often as he did last year. One of them today, 15 swinging strikes, great. But his overall swinging strike rate is looking not so great again. And he's not a ground ball pitcher. And I'm not saying like dump Aaron Civale. But if you're looking for sell high candidates, I would put him on that list.
Yeah, a lot depends on whether he can keep being kind of an outlier home run to fly ball rate guy. He's at, you know, I think like 8% for his career, down 9.4% so far. He's only made 14 starts. But, you know, he did have a high infield fly ball rate last season. That can help. He was a high infield fly ball rate, low home run to fly ball rate guy in the minors. So there are ways you can get around. Like, a high infield fly ball rate can help substitute for a low ground ball rate. But it's a tricky place to, yeah, it's a tricky balance to try to strike. And, you know, the increase in strikeout rate obviously helps as well.
So Scott,
it's less than one per inning now. It's dropped with 9 innings, 6 strikeouts. It's less than one per inning for the season.
It's down to like 24%, which is just a little bit better than average.
Yeah.
So Scott, you would obviously, if you can trade Civale for Luis Castillo, that's something you would do. That's a classic sell high situation.
Yes.
How about for like Frankie Montas, who's coming off a game where he got bombed?
Yeah.
You would trade Civale.
I would trade Civale for Montas. I would trade him for Paddock, of course, based on what we just said about him. It's worth bringing that up.
Would you do it for Dylan Bundy, who just had a bad start? You would do that as well.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. I agree. He is a sell high candidate if you get one of those names. But like, I have him SP32. You have him SP36. If you can't sell him, I don't. Just because we tell you to sell high on someone doesn't mean you just have to sell him for the sake of selling him, right?
It's why I'm always reluctant to call anybody a sell high, because I feel like people interpret that as, oh my gosh, I got to get him off my team. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there is enough reason to think this is the best he will ever look. And
you think you can trade him for someone you think is better.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's the whole point. Yes.
Like we think a bunch of those guys are better. It doesn't mean we think Aaron Civale is bad. Well, Scott might, but
no, I don't think he's bad. I just think
it's just like, if you think Luis Castillo is better, and you really should, or Chris Paddock, it's a smart trade to make.
There were a few other aces on the mound on Thursday. Don't really have to get into it, but Garrett Cole, Jacob DeGrom, Lance Lynn, they were all very good. You didn't really need me to tell you that, but that's it. Anything else to add there, guys, on those
Lance
three?
Lance Lynn got hit hard. It was kind of a weird game where he had like 11 hard hit balls or something ridiculous against him. But, you know, you got to get lucky in addition to being good, and he's good. So, you know, I don't think there's anything there. That was just something I noticed while watching the game.
Alrighty, it's a late break, but let's take it anyway. We come back, we'll look at some of the hitter performances from Wednesday night. We'll do that here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 4603 for complete details.
We're back here on Fantasy Baseball Today, and throughout our break, Scott pointed out to me that Adbert Alzolay, a prospect for the Cubs, actually pitched pretty well on Wednesday. Scott, what do you got?
Yeah, he pitched really well. It was actually the longest start of his career, only two hits in five innings, and he threw just 70 pitches, six strikeouts in those five innings. He was a guy I got excited about when he got called up last year because he started out with back-to-back starts, allowing just one hit. Both of them were right around four innings. And went on a pretty good run at AAA prior to that call-up with strikeouts and everything. The final numbers didn't look so great. He collapsed in the majors and then went back in the minors and struggled too. But here he is back again doing good things. I do think there is talent here. And I'm not sure if they'll be able to keep him in the rotation as bad as Alec Mills was. You know, maybe there's room for Alzolay. Probably not. But it's a name to remember.
How dare you besmirch the name of Alec Mills? No, I'm just kidding. It's probably over for Alec Mills. It was fun while it lasted. Scott, I noticed among you updating your rankings, as did I, we both have Ian Happ, Dom Smith, and Jesse Winker inside of our top 40 outfielders, and all of them were pretty good on Wednesday, as they have been all season. Ian Happ has now led off two games in a row in lieu of Chris Bryant's injury, and he hit a home run in three games in a row. He is currently a top 25 outfielder in both formats. Dom Smith has multiple hits in six of his last eight games. Think about that. Six of his last eight, multiple hits. He is batting .323 with an .1156 OPS. Dom Smith, his barrel rate, and his X-Slug are both in the 92nd percentile, according to StatCast. Jesse Winker hit his sixth homer of the season. He is now batting third in the Reds lineup.
Doubleheader. He hit a home run in one of those games, and he walked three times in the other. Very Jesse Winker day.
Yeah. I don't think there's much else to add except for those guys are really good. I hope you picked them up. They're top 40 outfielders with the potential to continue climbing.
Maybe there's a lesson with Jesse Winker in that don't give up on guys if they struggle. And Michael Conforto, another example that I can think of. Don't give up on guys the first year they're back from shoulder surgery.
Right, yeah, that is definitely fair. I remember a couple of years ago, Scott was banging the drum for Winker.
Oh, I was banging it hard.
On the other hand, I did the same thing with Gregory Polanco, and did not work out quite as well.
We might have a sound drop there, Scott. I'm going to have to look into that one. The Brew Crew.
It's just the name of the player, too. It doesn't help, but that's fine.
Oh, man. The Brew Crew, the bats woke up on Wednesday. Kesson Hira, Yelich had big games. They combined for five hits and a home run each. But as did Ryan Braun, who has now led off against lefties two times recently in his last four games. He hit a home run. He is 55% rostered. Avisaíl García, two hits, including his second home run of the season. He is 50% rostered. The Brewers have seven games next week. Chris, any interest in either Ryan Braun or Avi García?
I'm trying to look up how many. So Braun has started six of the last eight games. So that's a decent rate. And look, I think Ryan Braun's going to hit well whenever he's in the lineup. And so, you know, if they play seven games next week, you know, hopefully he plays five. That makes him pretty fringy. García, you would expect, you know, at least could play every game, whereas Braun, you know, almost certainly will not. So I'd probably have more interest in García, although I think Braun is probably still a better hitter at this point in their careers.
Speaking of burying the lead, something I've already done on this podcast, so why not continue? 53 minutes in, Fernando Tatis hit his 12th homer of the season. He just continues to be the best hitter in fantasy baseball. He is now inside Scott's top 10 in Roto ranks. Randall Grichuk, a double dong, five multi-hit games in a row, six homers in his last six games. He is still just 43% rostered on CBS in a points league. I like him in Roto either, but in a points league specifically, Scott, I will drop David Dahl, Adam Eaton, Victor Robles, Lourdes Gurriel. I would drop all of them for Randall Grichuk.
David Dahl, Lourdes Gurriel, who else?
Adam Eaton and Victor Robles.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why you want to try the hot hands compared to that group, especially in a points league. You know, Victor Robles in a Roto league for the steals potential, even though he doesn't have a steal yet. You'd hold on to him there.
I'm just...
It's very likely Grichuk is just hot now.
Yeah.
We've seen him get really hot in the past before.
Right, like he hit 31 homers last year.
Yeah.
He can hit.
The main things I'm looking at are, you know, the strikeout rate's down, the batted balls are manifesting more as line drives than fly balls, which is probably a good thing in his case. It's just such a small sample that you don't really know if that's, you know, it's a chicken and egg thing. Is he hot and therefore those numbers look better, yeah, or are those numbers better and that's why he's hot?
There's so many outfield, you know, Scott, you had your piece yesterday. Yeah, I think on Tuesday about like ranking these 10, you know, hot outfielders, and he'd be relatively low on that list. Like, I think I would still rather try for Dylan Carlson than Randall Grichuk right now.
I might still rather try for Robbie Grossman, who was the bottom.
He hit another home run today, didn't he?
I don't know
that he hit a home run. I saw he had
he drove in two runs.
Couple of ribbies.
Yeah. Two walks. His OBP is up to 452, Robbie Grossman.
Yeah, it also helps Grichuk that he's been facing the Orioles and the Red Sox. I know, Chris, you pointed that out during the break, so that also helps. But I am willing to pick him up. I'm very bullish on him, just in case, just to see if this kind of transformation he's gone through, walking more, striking out less, lots of line drives, less pop-ups, hard contact is up. It's just, it might be a legit transformation for Grichuk, so I'm a little bit more bullish on him. Josh Bell went 0 for 3 with a walk. He has a 378 OPS versus left-handed pitching this season, and he faces three lefties next week, so I don't really mind benching him. Is that all right, Scott?
Yeah, it's all right. I did a thorough reworking of my rankings yesterday and still couldn't bring myself to pull Josh Bell out of the top 10 first baseman for rest of season. You know, it helps that there are a lot of first basemen underachieving here in the early going. I have some concern for Josh Bell. I keep trying to remind myself, like, how often we look back at a player splits at the end of the season, and there's just this dreadful April that we've all forgotten about because he had the season we expected him to in the end. And it's just such a weird, it's easy to play head games with that, because like the season's about halfway over and yet we're not even a month in. And that's just like, it's hard to reconcile those two realities.
That all being said, Paul Goldschmidt or Josh Bell? Goldschmidt has been awesome.
He has.
Yeah, he has. I think I kept Bell ahead of him, but I debated it.
I was not a Goldschmidt guy coming into the season. I will take Goldschmidt over Bell at this point. Chris, let me throw one your way. Luke Voit, another one on fire. I assume at this point you have to take him over Josh Bell, right?
The only thing is he has still at times sat against right-handed pitchers. You know, what will that look like if the Yankees are ever at full health? In my eyes, there has never been a reason to sit Luke Voit against any pitcher because he's a really, really, really good hitter. And he has been that ever since he joined the Yankees, with the exception of like 20 games when he was playing through a hernia. And so, yeah, I think Luke Voit, I think I would take him over Josh Bell at this point. I think he's, you know, clearly healthy and clearly the guy that we were hoping he would be.
The last hitter note that I will add, Austin Nola, two hits on Wednesday, including his third homer. He is 40% rostered, so if this Mitch Garver injury is, you know, legitimate, if it's one that lasts, then you have a catcher there. But, you know, for any struggling catcher, if you just need someone you want to stream who's hot right now and is actually playing a decent amount, I think Austin Nola is a name to look at. All right, guys. Wednesday bullpen notes. Rafael Dolis for the Toronto Blue Jays picked up the save, up 5-2. Anthony Bass. I was about to say Brandon Bass. Is that a person? I don't know. Probably is somewhere.
Former Orlando Magic and Boston Celtics power forward.
Right, that's who I was thinking of. Why do I have that in my subconscious? That's very weird. Anthony Bass pitched 2 days in a row, including two innings on Tuesday, so I assume he needed the day off. I don't think this is anything really noteworthy. The Cubs and the Cards game produced a lot of noteworthy bullpen notes here. Andrew Miller entered the game tied 2-2 in the top of the seventh. That is the final inning of a doubleheader. And he loaded the bases. Giovanni Gallegos came in and allowed a two-run single. Then pitching the bottom of the seventh, Craig Kimbrell. In a 4-2 game, Rowan Wick pitched the past 2 days.
Seventh being the ninth,
yes,
basically.
Yeah, he picked up the save, Craig Kimbrell.
Right, because it was a doubleheader, seven-inning doubleheader. Yes, and struck out the side and has looked great. Well, I guess it's really just three outings, maybe four, where he's looked a lot better. But you never get a big sample with a reliever, of course. And I think it's very likely that we see him used again as the closer based on how well this outing went. So I would be looking to pick up Kimbrell if he was dropped in your league. Obviously, it's a scary situation still. And it could unravel for him again very quickly. But you know you're playing with fire anytime you pick up a new closer candidate.
We already spoke about Edwin Diaz. Brandon Kinsler allowed a two-run home run to Michael Conforto with the game tied. We'll go over to Marlins man here. Chris, is there any names worth paying attention to in the back end of the Marlins bullpen?
Not really, no. This team is kind of falling apart. They don't have a lot of talent. And
I'm sorry.
No, there's not really anyone there that I like. Brad Boxberger's been okay so far. I guess he's got the wily vet status that could get him an opportunity in the ninth inning, but
I'm not really that worried about Kinsler's job security personally.
Yeah. Yeah, like this was really his first bad outing.
Rafael Montero pitched a clean ninth and then gave up a grand slam in the 10th to who? Manny Machado. It's also worth mentioning that he had over 40 pitches at that point.
This was just dumb management. He threw 17 pitches in the ninth inning in a tie game, set them down 1-2-3. And then I think it was like two pitches to the first batter, six to the next batter, a 9 or 10 pitch walk to Fernando Tatis. And then they still left him in to face Manny Machado. And it's like, this is a guy who is still not really throwing his slider because of concerns about his elbow. So why are you leaving him in, one, for a second inning after he just threw 17 pitches, and two, for 42 pitches just in general? This is not a Rafael Montero blown save. This is on, I assume it wasn't Chris Woodward because he's suspended. So whoever was managing for the Rangers, that was bad.
Bad job, guys. Yeah. All right, Thursday probables to stream or not to stream. Let's quickly run through this list. James Paxton, you throwing him out there, Scott, against Tampa Bay?
I think so.
Chris, Spencer Howard at the Toronto Blue Jays?
Probably not.
On the other side, Chase Anderson at against the Phillies, Scott?
No.
In game two, Phillies and Blue Jays doubleheader, Chris, Vince Velasquez at Toronto, or at Buffalo, I guess.
No. No. No.
No. Scott, Trent Thornton against the Phillies.
Did Spencer Howard pitch tonight? I thought I saw that. I'm sorry.
Well, he might have. I'm just going off of probable pitchers on MLB.com.
So. No, okay, he didn't. Sorry, I saw something different.
All right, who'd you ask me about, Frank?
Forget it. It doesn't matter anyway. That guy stinks. Spencer Turnbull at the White Sox. Would you start him, Scott?
If I really wanted to squeeze an extra start in there, but I don't have a lot of faith.
Lucas Giolito is a must start. Chris, mm-hmm. Christian Javier at Colorado. Eek.
No, I would prefer to avoid the Rockies at home.
Scott, Herman Marquez at home in Coors Field against Houston.
Yeah, I think I would do that. I agree. I wouldn't start Javier because that just seems like the kind of profile that could get crushed at Coors Field. But I'll go with Marquez.
Chris, Seth Lugo back in the rotation at the Marlins.
No. I would expect he's probably only going to throw 50 to 60 pitches at most.
Shane Bieber is must start, obviously. Trevor Williams at home against Cleveland, Scott.
No.
Clayton Kershaw must start at Seattle. Chris, Yusei Kikuchi at home against the Dodgers.
No, that's a really tough matchup.
Brandon Woodruff is a must-start. Jose Berríos, I assume, still a must-start. Nathan Eovaldi, Scott, at Baltimore.
I know he got hit hard last time, but he was still using the curveball a lot and got a lot of swinging strikes. So that's a good matchup. I will say yes to Eovaldi.
On the other side, Asher Wojciechowski, Chris, at home against the Red Sox.
No, I don't think he's that good.
Kyle Gibson at San Diego, Scott.
No.
Dinelson Lamet is a must start. He's going up against the Texas Rangers. Sonny Gray at St. Louis is a must start. Chris, Adam Wainwright at home against Cincinnati.
No.
Alex Young at Oakland.
Did you start him, Scott? Say something, Frank?
No, Wainwright's just pitched well. But yeah,
Alex
probably
Young's
not
pitched well too. But Oakland's good. And I think I need to see more from Alex Young before I trust in him.
Chris, Sean Manaea at home against Arizona. Just say no.
No.
Last but not least, Scott, Kevin Gausman at home against the Angels.
Ooh, that's a fun one. If I was looking for more strikeouts, yes. If I was looking to preserve ERA and WHIP, I think I'd play cautiously.
For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today on our YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.